Your Eminence, how are you?
Pretty much everyone's here, right? Good afternoon, everyone, and thank you for the third press conference on this third day of the General Assembly. Again, I'm Judy Keene, Director of Public Affairs for the USCCB. And joining me today is Bishop Burbidge. He is from the Diocese of Arlington, and he is also chairman of our Committee on Communications, and he will be introducing our panelist. Bishop Burbidge.
Thank you, Judy, and thank you, everyone, for being here today and your presence throughout our deliberations. Glad to have you here today. Hope our responses to your questions will be helpful in your work. So we had a very significant day, as you all know, and approved some motions that will help us to move forward, especially in the light of bishops' accountability, also providing additional means for concerns and allegations to come forward, and also reaffirming the need for lay expertise in helping us in our work. So Cardinal Joseph Turbin, Cardinal Tobin is the Archbishop of Newark and also the chairman of the Committee on Clergy and Consecrated Life Vocations. And Cardinal Tobin's committee helped to oversee the Episcopal commitment. So any questions dealing with that would be most appropriately addressed to Cardinal Tobin. And Bishop Robert Dealey, Bishop of Portland, Maine, who is also the chairman of the Bishop's Committee on Canonical Affairs and Church Governance. His committee did tremendous work in overseeing the protocols and the directives that were voted upon today. So questions related to them would be most appropriately addressed to Bishop Dealey. So thank you for your presence, and we're happy to receive your questions.
Great, and we'll open the floor for questions now. Again, just like yesterday and the day before, if you kindly raise your hand, and then I'll choose you if you can note your name, who you're with, and then please also wait for the microphone. Thank you, and with that, we will take our first question. Yes, JD. Whoops, and there's the mic.
Thank you. Bishop Dealey, my question is for you. You mentioned today during the discussion that there had been four investigations undertaken by a metropolitan in the last year, and that you said that they had been very successful by your estimation, and therefore that was a sign that the general principles of vos estis in the metropolitan model would be successful. Many people have sort of wondered, in light of the questions about what was removed by Archbishop Lori from the report that went to the Holy See about sort of the financial aspects of the Bransfield investigation, whether that can really be called a success. I mean, is it a success if certain aspects were removed and then only the Washington Post was able to report them?
Thank you, JD. My response was concerning the process. The process was an investigation of Bishop Bransfield, which has been successfully completed, and the unfortunate revelations which have come out of that have indicated have successfully exposed a problem. And I was on the road and traveling to get here and meetings and stuff on the weekend, so I have not familiarized myself with all the rest of it, but I don't think that undermines the success of the investigation and what it accomplished.
J.D., if I could add, too, I think Archbishop Lori himself answered the question by acknowledging that was a mistake. I think the motu proprio makes sure that all reports, everything about the report is to be forwarded. So I think that safeguards that kind of mistake in the future.
Okay, next question. Yes, Wyatt.
Thank you. Wyatt Goolsbee with EWTN. This question is for any of you. I'll address it to Cardinal Tobin just because I happen to be reading action item number 7. But I was just wondering, in reading all of these things about bishop accountability, what I didn't see was the role or how bishops should address civil authorities. In other words, if there's a situation where somebody is sexually abused, my first instinct is to say, let's go to the police and file a police report. What role does that play? How do the bishops work with civil authorities on this issue?
Well, I think that the motu proprio vos estis makes that in the last, that relationship. Wouldn't be as specific as we'd like it in the United States because of the varying situations of what the police or whatever the civil authority means in a given cultural context. However, I do believe in the United States, and speaking, for example, for the province of Newark, which is our five dioceses in New Jersey, we, since 2002, have had a memorandum of understanding with each of the 21 county prosecutors in the state that we will report any criminal activity. And as far as I can tell, the Attorney General will be able to verify that. We've been faithful to that. And I know similar arrangements are present across the United States. I'm confident that the idea of doing this in-house is long gone.
Great. Next question. You had a question right here, right? Gentleman, right, just before. Thank you.
Pablo Kay from Angeles News, the Archdiocese of Los Angeles. This question is for any of the bishops. During the first and second days of this meeting, when the talk turned to evangelization during Bishop Barron's presentation, also yesterday with Archbishop Vigneron's, I noticed that many of the bishops got animated, got engaged, like this is what they wanted to talk about. But just glancing at social media, there were some maybe complaints that, oh, they're not talking about the sex abuse crisis, so on and so forth. But again, it seemed like it was a refreshing dialogue for many of the bishops. My question is, does the abuse crisis change how the church carries out her primary mission, which is evangelizing?
I think it's at the heart of the bishop's ministry, you know, teaching, sanctifying, governing. Bishops certainly have the heart. They get animated with the ministry that allows for teaching and sanctifying in a very special way, which includes evangelization. It's what we were ordained to do, to preach the joy and the truth of the gospel and to go out and share it with especially those who have wandered away for one reason or another. But also we're to govern. And right now, a priority, our most important task that we identified this past week was dealing with the issues that consumed our time and energy today. It's mandated. It's what we have to do. There's a sense of urgency. It demanded our full attention. And so it doesn't mean we stop evangelizing and sanctifying and teaching, but we were here today. We were here these days for a very particular task, and with God's grace, we moved forward.
Yeah, and I think as well that one of the terrible costs of the scandal, this twin-headed scandal of clergy abuse and mismanagement by bishops, is costing people their faith, according to, and what a devastating example of terrible collateral damage. So I think it's entirely right that we give priority to this. I think what you saw, the enthusiasm in the hall yesterday or the day before when Bishop Barron was speaking, was because that's what we like to do. You know, that's what we, if you will, what we signed up for. But we take very seriously what we have to do. I was very grateful in the archdiocese that I serve, that despite, you know, all lots of reasons to the contrary, we had 1,500 catechumens and candidates received in the full communion of the church at Easter. I mean, that was it really moved me to tears, you know, just thinking how good God is and how wonderfully the Holy Spirit, while pointing out these terrible things that we have to address, still calls people to fullness of life in Christ.
Great. Next question, the woman right here, about the fourth row. Thank you, Emily.
I'm Regina Garcia with Associated Press. This question is for Bishop Dealey. When you were talking with the bishops earlier in the session, you described the third-party system as not just an answering machine, and so that there is some accountability there. So my question is the expectation then that the vendor that, you know, the church ends up choosing, will follow up with the Metropolitan and press him about the status of a report. If there is no action, is the vendor supposed to go to authorities? I'm trying to figure out what is the accountability there that you referred to, and to understand that it's not just an answering machine.
I believe, and I'm not. We are in the stages of setting up the system. What we did yesterday was authorize the setting up of a system and the writing the protocols for what that's going to be, and all the rest of that will take time. I have been doing this in my own diocese, and so, working out of that, it would be my experience with it. I believe that there is some kind of a report made back to the reporting system, because they make a report to the person who brings the complaint, allowing them to know that something has been done, that the report has been made, and so on. And beyond that, I'm not sure at this point. But in other words, there is somebody outside of the diocese in these third-party reporting systems who is monitoring, is letting it be known. I'm not exactly sure how all of that information gets communicated and all the rest of that. But there is some way in which they communicate back to the party that the complaint has been followed up on. So that's. There is some accountability in that regard.
Great. We'll go to Dennis and then Chris next. Okay, thanks.
Hi, Dennis Sadowski, Catholic News Service. You took the steps today and yesterday. I'm just wondering, though, how do you convince the people in the pews that what you're doing is going to be carried out? Because you said 2002 you were going to do all this, and people are seeing there's a lot of doubt. You admitted it yourself that evangelization is a big key to get the people back. So,
thank you for that. But I think it's important. It's important to know that we did it in 2002, and it's been successful. I think that that the controls, the vigilance, the common responsibility that we have with the people in the parishes and in the communities, are all ways in which we have built a safe environment in the Catholic Church. And I think that we have this new issue, a new problem with the conduct of some bishops, and we are addressing that. But we are addressing it with the tools which were successful in 2002. I think it would be false to say that we didn't get it and that we didn't do it. Certainly, it has been the case in my diocese, no thanks to me. I've only been there 5 years. But there hasn't been a substantiated allegation of clergy sexual abuse since 1993. That's because of vigilance, the programs that we have in terms of auditing, the Virtus program for child protection, the instruction, the education, and all the rest of that. And so I think the fact of the matter is that those programs have brought us to a place of success. So I think we need to get that story out. Sometimes it's difficult because people want to focus on a crisis rather than on what has already happened. But I think that we move ahead as best we can. I've certainly spoken to my people about what we've done and helped them to understand what has happened and the positive good. But we always have to be vigilant because the crimes that we talk about are part of our society, and a very sad part of our society, but they are part of our society.
Great. Okay. And then Chris, you had a question. So Chris, right up front here. Chris Gunty, Emily or Mary? Okay, thanks.
Chris Gunty from Catholic Review in Baltimore. A two-part question for you, Bishop Dealey. First would be, how close to what the ethics point and referral to the Independent Review Board that Baltimore and Boston have already put in place, will the new system look? And will the enhanced audits that Dr. Cesareo is calling for, will that look at how dioceses are complying with the third-party reporting system?
Thank you. First of all, Vos Estes is involved with more than the sexual abuse of minors. It deals with crimes against vulnerable adults and so on. So therefore, it is wider than the writ of the National Review Board, which is specifically geared to sexual abuse of minors. So I don't necessarily think that any eventual or possible changes in the audit system necessarily is connected directly to the implementation of OSESTES. I am not sure I would be answering out of turn, except I do think it's important to say that our intention is that somebody will receive the allegations on behalf of the Metropolitan. The Metropolitan Archbishop is engaged in the process. I think that might be a difference from the Baltimore model.
Okay, and then Ed, I believe you had a question next, and then we'll go to Jack.
Okay. Ed Condon, Catholic News Agency. I guess this is directed primarily to you, Cardinal Tobin, because it concerns the affirmation of episcopal commitments. The affirmation commits all the bishops to ensuring that their own individual codes of conduct contain clear explanations of the definition of sexual harassment and sexual misconduct with adults. In your own, you know, speaking with your sort of diocesan bishop hat on, what kind of time frame do you think will be necessary to bring that into effect? And more broadly, if this is left to each individual bishop in his diocese, is there a danger that there will be different standards in place in different dioceses, as we currently see with the use of words like credible and substantiated when describing allegations?
Yeah, I think maybe we're talking about at least a qualitatively different reality, because dioceses are responsible to develop personnel norms and to define within those norms that affect everyone, including the bishop, you know, what's what. So they're different because state laws are different, and we're responding to different state laws. However, I think that those differences are going to be shades of difference, you know, based on what the... So in a certain sense, a lot of this work has already been done. You know, the Archdiocese of Newark not only has, you know, this new legislation to guide us, but we've already had, you know, a personnel handbook, a clergy conduct handbook. We have guidelines for our seminarians, and we also have guidelines, you know, from the university where the seminaries are housed right now. So I don't think there's a... The question of the definition of credibility and credibly accused, yeah, that's a thorny one. And but I don't think it's... It really speaks to this reality of what we're talking about here. Thanks, Ed.
Great. And Jack Jenkins, please.
Jack Jenkins with Religion News Service. This is, I believe this is directed at you, Cardinal Tobin. It's a technical question, and I'm just trying to get clarity on it. This morning, Bishop McKnight stood up and celebrated the idea of, you know, mandating lay involvement. And he pointed to a provision that said that while you can't overstep the papal document, you can, bishops can pledge themselves to do so. I'm just trying to figure out, do you think that that's what the bishops did this morning, was pledge themselves to do that? Is that an individual choice that bishops make? Is there anything stopping bishops from making a collective pledge to have lay involvement? Just trying to get the granular nature of that.
Well, I think that was one of the things that was included in the document that my committee worked on. And it's a pledge to involve qualified lay people. While I think it really is splitting hairs to say that because the word mandate wasn't used in the motu proprio, that, you know, it's there are two equally possible options. You know, either you use lay or you don't. I don't know any metropolitan, and I was in a meeting with the other 31 on the night before last, and we said, does anybody here believe you can do justice to what the church expects of us and what civil society expects of us without using qualified lay people? there was no exceptions. So, you know, I there's always mathematical possibilities of things, but I would say proceeding with what we legislated today for ourselves will the possibility of doing that without qualified lay people, I would say, is next to impossible. It is impossible.
Let me just add to that.
And it'd be highly irresponsible to do it.
I think that it's already done. I think that there's a false notion that somehow we're going to do something tomorrow that we haven't done up to now. Mm-hmm. The fact is, in every single diocese in the United States, you have a review board, which is made up predominantly of lay people. So we have already fulfilled that commitment. We're already working with the collaboration and the cooperation of lay people. I think in speaking for the bishops, we don't exist in a church in which we're here, the people are here. We live in a church in which we are actively engaged with the lay people who work with us for the furtherance of the gospel. And that includes our review boards and investigation teams and all the rest of it. We have safe environment coordinators, we have compliance instruments and all the rest of that, all of which are already run by lay people. So we're already working with lay people in all these different ways. This is not something which starts tomorrow because we said this today. This is a statement of where we are. And I think that's true across the church.
I heard a summary today. It says a brief summary, but it says the motu proprio, which is to the universal church, says we may and encourage, of course, to use lay expertise. Our own directives say we should, and our commitment today said we will. Mm-hmm. And a strong word there, in one of the statements, number four, I think it is, the lay expertise is indispensable. That's our commitment. We understand that, as Bishop Dealey said, this is our practice, and we certainly made a public commitment.
Yes, the woman in the very back here.
Hi, I'm Kate Amara from the NBC affiliate here in Baltimore, and I want to follow up on the question from the Catholic Review. And there was questions from your colleagues today about clarification on the reporting system. And the one that you approved here, does the third party stop at the phone call, or is there a third party included along the entire flow chart? Because it's from what I've read, and I'm not an ecclesiastic language expert, but it seems like this third party, a contractor, takes the report, but then gives the report to the bishop and the Vatican, or is there a requirement to also include law enforcement, as we do in our system here in Baltimore? It may be a work in progress, which I've heard you say, but I just want to get clarification on that.
The report from the third party system, the way we anticipate doing this is that it's made to the person or persons who are designated to receive it by the Metropolitan and by the Metropolitan. So that's who the report is made to. Here in Baltimore, I believe the system is made that the report is made to two judges. But in the third party system that we set up, because the Metropolitan is actively engaged in the investigation, so therefore the report is made to him.
And perhaps the difference too, pardon me, is that those people who receive the report will not dawdle with it. They'll give it immediately to the Metropolitan, who begins the canonical process that's envisioned by the motu proprio.
The difference is that immediately the Metropolitan has to, we don't know who's going to do the investigation at this point. Because the Metropolitan has to notify. First is the receiving of the complaint, and then the Metropolitan then notifies the Holy See, notifies the nuncio, and through him the respective office in the Holy See, as to whether or not he's going to do the investigation or someone else is going to do the investigation. So, and that's up to the congregation in Rome. Might think there'd be somebody more adept or more adapted to do this investigation in this particular thing. So that's the difference.
So there,
That's in the legislation in that they already, both in the charter, which is you know, where you are a mandated reporter, So reports to civil authority have to be made when they are required. And the same is true in vos estes, that the encouragement is made in the document to follow the civil law in making reports. So if it's a criminal act, then it has to be reported to civil authorities. That's done by the, I believe that is contained in the instruction at the beginning where the person assisting the Metropolitan helps him to make the necessary civil reports that have to be made.
Okay, great. We have time for two more questions, so we'll go ahead and take JD for now, and then we'll see who else we can get in before we end the press conference. Thank you.
Thank you. JD Flynn, again, Catholic News Agency, again. I guess my question mostly is for you, Eminence, although Bishop Dealey, you may have a thought on it in terms of the law. We heard Colonel Raines and Dr. Cesario talk about the importance to the people of God of a comprehensive release of information about McCarrick, his activity, those whom he might have influenced, those kinds of things. We know that the Congregation for Bishops is doing their investigation, and that what will come of that will come of that. But is there anything that precludes the diocesan bishops in the places where McCarrick served from releasing their own reports, those which they sent to Rome, or other reports about precisely that information?
The comprehensive report is being prepared, and I believe it's being vetted right now in Rome. It's not the Congregation of Bishops that's doing it, it's the Secretary of State who's coordinating it. Yes, there are some impediments for us doing everything that we would like to do in two dioceses, in Newark, the Archdiocese of Newark, and in the Diocese of Metuchen, because we're also under a criminal investigation by the Attorney General of New Jersey. So any actions we take have to be, you know, vetted by him, by his people as well. However, I'm confident that the Holy See is, we were able to send a lot of information before the AG began his work, and I'm confident that this report, and I believe the Holy See's requirement is it has to be accurate and it has to be complete. And I think, I hope that's going to be the case. I don't
you want to say? I know, I think that you would have more experience with that than me.
Okay. Mark, CNS.
Mark Patterson, CNS. I have two questions that any bishop on the panel can answer. The first is based on the non-penal restrictions action item, and the other is based, at least in part, on the Vos Estes implementation plan. First, well, I'm sure that each of you consider the ostracism from your fellow bishops as the most severe sanction. Which non-penal restriction among those outlined in the action item you approved today is the one that would affect you personally the greatest, should it be imposed upon you? And second, the whole Vos Estes Lux Mundi motu proprio and the discussions here this week would not have even been necessary were it not for the bad apples like Theodore McCarrick and Michael Bransfield. And my question is, how is it even possible that these two could have pulled the wool over the eyes of apparently the entire body of bishops for such a long time as they did?
To your first question, I suppose, you know, but even there, I'm not sure, because basically what those restrictions do is that what they're trying to do is to make it possible for the ordinary of the diocese, that is the present bishop of the diocese, to be the spokesperson and the interlocutor for the diocese. So therefore, the prohibition against public statements and all of that kind of thing restrict the emeritus bishop, but they don't necessarily, he can continue to preach and all the rest of that. Now, if in fact there are other crimes which come up about which restrict him, then we're into penal situations, and that's beyond the writ of the diocesan bishop. The purpose of this protocol was to establish that the diocesan bishop is the diocesan bishop, and that the person who is retired or is now an emeritus bishop does not speak for the diocese and does not should not present himself as doing that. That's essentially what goes behind that. So it would depend. I don't know. And when I'm an emeritus bishop, I'm sure I will not want to speak for the diocese. I think I'll be happy to go around preaching, teaching, and being a happy confirmation machine or something of that nature. So that would be that. And the second thing is, I don't know, but how does, institutions, I'm not sure the church is the only place in which these kinds of things happen. I mean, institutionally, do you think that some of these problems that we're having in our culture, there were other people in these companies and in these organizations that didn't know something was going on but figured somebody else was taking care of it or something of that nature? I mean, we each deal with our own responsibilities in our own world, and maybe we have to expand on the horizons within which we do those things and so on. But I think it's not surprising. I mean, I think it's part of who we are that these things come up in our lives. I think most of us have seen, when we see other crises, we ask ourselves the same question: how did this happen? Whether it be in a bank or in entertainment or something like that, did people not know that this kind of behavior was going on and they allowed it to happen? I don't know the answer to the second question. I think it's a question of each of us deals with the responsibilities that we have and tries to do the best we can. And sometimes isn't paying attention. I think what we've done with some of the things we've said today is to call each other to responsibility for each other.
I would agree with that. I think all dioceses believe, they have the protocols, the procedures, the oversight necessary, especially with the help of lay expertise in the areas of finance and other areas, the fraternal correction piece. You think they're in place, you're reviewing them constantly, you're allowing outside sources to come in and to review your procedures and protocols. And then when you see a failure, like something didn't work here, well, that intensifies the review. And one of the reasons that our sense of urgency was so great this week, because there were gaps, and we have to become even stronger in what we're putting in place.
I think personally, and I'm speaking personally, not as the Archbishop of Newark, but as the oldest of a big family, I see it in the sense of responsibility rather than, compliance. I grew up in a household where you were responsible, especially for your younger siblings. And when someone betrays that responsibility, there's a mysterious part of it that I can't understand. I really can't. And I would imagine there are parents here that, when you hear about, some really egregious behavior by parents, you say, how could they do that? How could that happen? So I think that we can say there were structures, there was a culture, there was this or there was that. There's also the mystery of evil, and I can't explain that.
Great. And with that, I think we're going to go ahead and wrap